Welcome to New Cyber Frontier, bringing you the latest news on cybersecurity and the local Colorado economy, focused on cybersecurity industry growth and initiatives that support cybersecurity economics. We hope this special series on blockchain builds your excitement for a possible future which empowers individual privacy. Please follow and participate as New Cyber Frontier is supporting a grassroots community effort to empower the individual in the digital age. Check out privacyforthepeople.org to see the upcoming crowdfunding campaign. Now sit back and enjoy as we introduce our great guest for today's show.
Well, welcome back, everyone. My name is Sean Marie. I am the host of today's edition of the New Cyber Frontier. In today's edition, we welcome Keon Williams, who is the president and CEO of the Cyber Leadership and Strategy Solutions, otherwise known as the CLASS LLC organization based out of Atlanta, Georgia. He is the past president of the oldest and largest information cybersecurity organization in the world, the Information Systems Security Association, ISSA International. Background working for the government at the CDC, former Army soldier. Welcome, Keon. Thanks for spending some time with us today at the New Cyber Frontier.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, you know, you and I have collaborated and known each other for quite some time and in various roles, and we've talked about many different topics over the years. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and a little bit about your company?
Sure. For ages, my elevator pitch focused on the fact that I was a business person who specialized in cybersecurity. And as I have worked to refine that, we've kind of transitioned it to go just from a business guy thinking about cybersecurity to really being a person who promotes thinking strategically about cybersecurity and really tying strategy into all of the security things that people do. It's one of the reasons that the company is called Cyber Leadership and Strategy Solutions. So we found a way to incorporate the name into the company. That vision and that commitment to strategy also influences some of the events that we do, the approach that we take with clients, a lot of the activities that we do for the community as philanthropists and as business people within the company is focused on increasing awareness, getting people to do things in a more business-oriented approach, and making sure that long-term planning is incorporated into the topic. It's one of the reasons that we started the Cyber Strategy Retreat, which in the 2019 version is a one-day conference that has a fabulous lineup of speakers. We did the first event in Cupertino in June 2019. We're doing the second event in Atlanta on July 11th, and each one of the speakers is aligning with the concept so that more people start to think about their long-term strategies instead of limiting their efforts, their approach, and their investments to today's needs.
So you talk about a lineup of key speakers from a cybersecurity strategy perspective. And so we don't hear a lot of that. And it's one of the things that when we as cybersecurity professional senior leaders in an organization, when we have to talk to the executives and the board of directors, it really is about strategy and balancing the needs of the business with risk. What's your perspective on that?
Well, so academically, I'm an MBA, so I have spent as much time on the business side of the house as I have on the technology, security, and risk management side of the house. And across both of those domains, what I have observed personally and what I have seen in academic research and in business writing is that most businesses fail miserably when it comes to strategic thinking. So if we apply the concept of strategic thinking to business strategy, to sales and marketing strategy, to growth strategy, to cybersecurity strategy, it's security is not some kind of strange outlier. All of those business areas have a shortage in strategic thinking. I just personally chose to focus on cybersecurity because where the shortage exists the greatest impact to the risk management program in an organization happens when people just rush out there and do compliance for the sake of compliance or put controls in place for the sake of controls, and they really don't think about the long-term goal or objective.
Yeah, and when we talk about strategy, it's usually when we operationalize strategy, we're operationalizing or aligning the business objectives, the tasks, the daily activities to some strategic initiative that was approved by the board, and that also includes cybersecurity. So we're going to take a break right now. So my name is Sean Murray. I am the host of today's edition of the New Cyber Frontier. We welcome our guest, Keon Williams, the president CEO of Class LLC based out of Atlanta, Georgia. We're going to take a break right after this. We hear from our sponsor.
Cyber Resilience Institute helps build strong cyber communities designed to prevent members from attack. Like building a neighborhood watch, it takes coordination and a sharing community to protect our identities and valuables in the virtual world. Typically, we hear that organizations know they need to do something to protect their cyber assets, but don't know where to begin. Let Cyber Resilience Institute help your community create an action plan. Cyber Resilience Institute will build your community or business marketplace so that it is designed to support a collective cyber defense. Contact them for more information at cyberresilienceinstitute.org.
Welcome back to the New Cyber Frontier. I'm Sean Murray, your host for today's edition. We have Keon Williams, the president and CEO of the Cyber Leadership and Strategy Solution, otherwise known as Class LLC. You know, we were talking, Keon, about cybersecurity strategy, and with a business background, you know, when we look at an organization, it doesn't matter if it's government, it doesn't matter if it's publicly traded or commercial, small business, having an understanding of what your business is and what the strategy is moving forward to be profitable, to be successful in a business. What do you think that takes when you talk about it from a strategic perspective?
Well, you know, part of the solution to the problem is really understanding what you actually want to accomplish. So imagine, if you will, that I am a security leader, you know, not necessarily the CEO, not necessarily the CIO. You know, people often forget that the CIO has security responsibilities. But if we talk abstractly about security leadership, where strategy comes into play is really, what do you want to accomplish? You know, do we want to reduce risk by a certain amount? How do we quantify the amount of risk that we want to reduce? And once we answer that question, strategy plays the part in identifying, well, what is the target, and then what is the sequence of activities that need to be performed to achieve the outcome that we identified. And from that, you start to develop your metrics and your measurements. You start to develop your key performance indicators. It allows you to start to identify what is the best financial investment to make to achieve the target. Like, you know, one of the questions that comes up very often is, you know, what part does emerging technology play within an organization? You know, if people are constantly developing new technology, if we're always dealing with disruptive technology, you know, I work for a manufacturing organization, and then all of a sudden I'm going to find every bit of IoT and deploy it into the environment because IoT is exciting and interesting and everybody's talking about it. What strategy is going to force me to do is consider, what impact does this addition of new technology have on the target that we identified? And is the new technology so valuable that it requires a change in the direction that we were going? Strategy is not some fixed tablet where you have etched it in stone and said that we're never going to change the way that we are doing things, but it does provide a foundation and guidelines that direct your path and say that if we are going to go in a different direction, we need to justify it because we've made all these adjustments. You know, if we're going in a different direction, it allows us to continue to track our metrics and our measurements and say, was this change reasonable? Did it add to the solution or did it increase the problem? And if you don't have some kind of plan, and if you're not tracking your performance against the plan, then how do you know, were you successful? Are we going to spend $1 billion on IoT because it was exciting, but we didn't need it, and then the company loses money and our revenue goals are missed? Or are we going to be strategic and precise and make sure that whatever we're doing is going to contribute to the target? That's where I think strategy plays a huge role in decision making and offers a lot of value to businesses, regardless of the line of business or their area of focus. And then if everybody can come together, you know, I started talking about your security leaders, but then you add the security leaders doing this, the financial leaders are doing this, the business unit leaders are doing this. Now everybody is working together from the same playbook, working towards the same goal, trying to accomplish the same objective, and everybody just plays their part. We all have the measurements and the performance measures, and it allows us to identify and confirm, are we doing what we said we wanted to do, or are we going in some crazy direction down the rabbit hole to visit the Mad Hatter and all those other crazy people down there?
Yeah, it absolutely makes sense. You know, when we talk about, especially in medium to larger organizations, there's a key position within the organization, if they're doing this well, called the enterprise architect. And, you know, from an IT perspective, we don't look at enterprise architecture as, you know, the all of our devices and the network gear and data flows. We're looking at the enterprise architect is that person who is aligning all the business processes with the strategy and how we achieve those objectives. Can you elaborate on the role of the enterprise architect and how they can help the organization be successful, as you described earlier?
Well, what I'll say is that enterprise architecture is one of my favorite topics that I think is often overlooked because it's very misunderstood. You know, usually people hear the term enterprise architecture and they immediately think about the guy who was building the right network infrastructure or building the applications. And if you boil it down to the traditional definition, enterprise architecture is really focused on understanding all of your business processes. Where does the process start? Where does it end? How does it function? And then on top of that enterprise architecture and on top of those business processes that you have formally documented and mapped out, then you can start to say, well, for this business process to work, I need this layer of communications or these communications capabilities to support it. You know, on top of the enterprise architecture, I can build my security layer. What controls need to be in place to make sure that we don't have some kind of disruption that is going to stop the process from working as intended? And so enterprise architecture really becomes the foundation for everything that the business is going to do. It also helps the business do basic things like impact analysis. You know, if I map out all of my business processes and I understand the relationship for the technology, infrastructure, and communications components between all of those business processes within the organization, it becomes very, very easy to identify what the heck is the most important thing in the business. You know, people talk theoretically about the crown jewels, but your crown jewels aren't only your intellectual property or the data that you have about your clients or the secret sauce that makes the business run. The crown jewels are also going to be the underlying technology infrastructure and the underlying processes that allow all of the magic that the business does to happen. So if I work for a widget manufacturing company, widgets don't just come out of the assembly line by themselves. Understanding the business process for the assembly line, for the smelting, if we're taking raw materials and turning them into what we need to produce the components, every phase or aspect related to taking some iron ore and turning it into a tiny widget that serves a purpose and meets specifications is going to have a relationship to some sort of business process or to a collection of business processes. And enterprise architecture gives me a framework to understand how all of that works. And it also gives me the foundation to understand, where are my single points of failure? Where are all the critical infrastructure components stored? What is the worst thing that can happen? So that we can then, as security people, go in and make sure that the right controls are in place, the right continuity planning is in place, and that we actually have business resilience within the environment.
Yeah, in one of the key things too for enterprise architecture is documenting all the relationships between the key stakeholders so that everyone is a participant in that strategy, right?
Absolutely. You know, I'm not a fan of silos. within an organization, I believe that a lot of your success comes from collaboration and everybody working together, and everybody extends beyond just distinct business units, but it really does involve everybody. If you go through the formal process that's defined as something like the Open Group Architecture Framework, every individual within the company related to a business process has to come together to make sure that they all understand it, they understand the relationships between other processes, which is customarily going to lead to a intersectional kind of approach where people as simple as secretaries all the way up to the chief executive of the organization is going to play some part, and formally mapping all of that stuff out, make sure that everybody understands how does it work, where can it fail, what is most important, so that we have the right protections in place.
Yeah, it's good to, it's a key thing to hit on is you mentioned TOGAF, right? The Open Group Architecture Framework. You know, these are tools that allow an organization to actually mature that process, and you don't have to start from scratch with little knowledge. You can actually use a tool that's available like TOGAF, or there's other ones that are out there as well. So one of the oldest, and I think the first was Zachman Architecture Framework. We got TOGAF. If you're on the Department of Defense, you have DODAF, and there's others as well. So, you know, it's key to understand that there's tools to help the professional do that. So we are speaking with Keon Williams. He is the president and CEO of Cyber Leadership and Strategy Solutions, otherwise known as CLASS LLC, based out of Atlanta, Georgia. My name is Sean Murray, and I am the person who is talking about the new cyber frontier with Keon. We're going to take a break for our sponsor, and we'll be right back. Security Services are your cybersecurity experts with decades of experience providing professional training services for our clients in various industries. We offer professional training and certification in areas of cybersecurity, safety, health, and environmental services at our academy. Our in-person and online training provides a collaborative environment where students can interact directly with instructors through live chats or in private classrooms. Visit MurraySecurityServices.com for more information. Welcome back to the New Cyber Frontier. I'm Sean Murray, your host for today's edition. We have Keon Williams, who is the president and CEO of CLASS LLC, based out of Atlanta, Georgia. We're talking about cybersecurity from a business perspective, strategy. We're talking about objectives, KPIs, understanding the various tasks that run the organization or the business processes. And, you know, one of the things Keon talked about, it doesn't matter if you're the admin assistant all the way up to the CEO of the organization, you participate in a business process and bring success to the organization. So for your company, Keon, when you go out and do a client engagement, what are some of the first steps that you take when you do that client engagement? What is it that you're trying to solve or what is it that you're trying to understand before you even make any recommendations?
Well, one of the things that we do that's unique is we almost always do a business impact analysis as an initial activity, because I have seen very few organizations, regardless of the industry and regardless of where they're located geographically, very few organizations have a good understanding of how everything works. So that business impact analysis is a great tool to tie the understanding and the conversation process into the engagement. You know, if you start with the BIA, what people are normally limited to is continuity planning. But I have found that this is a great tool to understand your business processes, to understand the technology that supports them, to understand who owns it, because that's often a question that comes up. Hey, who owns the server? And nobody knows, because nobody has documented the business process and identified what data flows through a server. And it is very disruptive to assign to the CIO ownership of everything in the organization because it's technology related. And the business impact analysis helps us to identify who is the business owner of the process or of the data or of the information technology that the company uses, so that then we can start to assign priorities, we can start to assign ratings. A very closely related follow-up activity that we do is data classification. I should be shocked, but I'm not. But most organizations don't do a great job of classifying their data, or if they have documented the classification scheme, they do a horrible job of applying that scheme consistently to all of the data within the organization. When that doesn't happen, it makes it very difficult to make sure that from a risk management perspective, the right controls are in the right places and the data is surrounded or enveloped by the controls that are necessary to protect it. GDPR is very high on people's radar, but is really just a permutation of data privacy. Data privacy should be important regardless of where you are and regardless of what compliance framework you're subject to. Every organization has a responsibility to protect the personally identifiable information of their customers, of their clients. And in some cases, I've seen data breaches. They're just, we have lost the data for all of our employees, but we have a workforce of 100,000 people. So now we've exposed a lot of data for people, and it was required that these people provided this data because they were employees and we needed it for human resources. So understanding what your categorizations are and applying them properly and developing the right suite of controls to protect that data, I think that as the number two activity and the business impact analysis as the number one activity often lead to the greatest success from a security consulting perspective, but it has value for the entire business once they understand where everything is, where all the data is, and how everything works. It has value from an IT perspective if you discover that all of your critical assets are on a server that is a member of lifetimes of the old and archaic and it's about to die. Often people have no idea that you have critical data on legacy hardware. So these processes hope to identify where everything is and how important those items are to the organization.
You know, you hit on a key thing that's getting a lot of visibility today. The European Union came out a couple years ago with GDPR. We have a lot of states updating, and the United States updating cybersecurity laws because we don't have across the board national cybersecurity law, other than specific to industry like FERPA, HIPAA, Privacy Act 1974, which applies to the U.S. federal government. But when you talk about privacy, now we're talking about regulatory standards. So from a cybersecurity strategy or organizational strategy, a business impact analysis, how do you keep up with the regulatory terrain for your clients, and how do you educate them? Because what I see sometimes with my clients is they don't understand some of the relationships between regulatory compliance requirements and some of the business processes.
Well, if we're thinking strategically about this problem, what I would argue is that data privacy should be a strategic objective. If you make data privacy a strategic objective, then the regulatory frameworks are less important, and then the organization identifies what are the thresholds within the organization that we're willing to accept, what practices are appropriate for us to meet those thresholds, and then we can go back after the fact and say, hey, for these regulatory standards that we're subject to what extent do we meet the regulatory requirements as a result of the business practices that we establish within our organization? You know, people talk about regulations like the general data protection requirements out of the EU, but they overlook the fact that, you know, out of all of the developed nations and the OECD, you're going to have 180 different approaches that are regulatory requirements for data privacy. So it is a much wiser approach, in my opinion, to start with developing a corporate standard and a strategic objective for data privacy, and then you can start to add on anything that is missing that is identified in a regulatory framework in a location where you do business. If you take the work that we do within Class LLC, I go to Asia once every quarter. And so I'm in tune with what's happening in Singapore. And they've had two major data breaches that affect the majority of the citizens in Singapore. You know, they had a data breach of their health system, which is the equivalent of breaching Health and Human Services at the CDC or breaching the repository of the hospital data. So, you know, 2/3 of the citizens had their public health records exposed. And then I think it was 600,000 people had their prescription information exposed. That was beyond the scope of GDPR. It was subject to Singapore-specific laws. So if I'm a U.S. company doing healthcare collaboration in Singapore, GDPR is out of scope, but that's where everybody is applying their focus, which again, I think reinforces the idea that every company has a responsibility to identify their strategic objectives for data privacy. And then we can start looking, where do we do business? You know, if I only do business in Mexico and Canada, then GDPR has less impact on my organization from a data privacy perspective. But did I overlook what Mexico requires and what Canada requires? Or if I do zero work whatsoever in the European Union, you know, the entire world is focused on standards from the EU because of the financial penalty associated with not doing things properly according to, you know, they're pushing 100 articles and rules and regulations, but that does not necessarily mean that you are going to satisfy the requirements in another country, because every country has the right and the opportunity to define how they are going to protect the data of their citizens, and the EU is not all encompassing.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because there's some countries do a really good job at defining their own privacy regulatory standards, Canada being one of them, Singapore, Argentina, you know, the EU. You know, then you've got the complications in the EU. Not every European country is in is part of the EU. Now you've got Brexit happening. So, you know, the regulatory standards are pretty complex. But I like the idea that you mentioned, it's a strategic objective to have a privacy compliance program in the organization. And once you mature that, then you can fill in the gaps with additional requirements based on where you're performing or operating. That makes sense.
It, you know, this idea is not my original idea. What I've found is that if you think about some of your cybersecurity companies that are doing really well and they're never in the news, many of the chief technology officers in these companies and the CIOs in these companies and even the CEOs in these companies are fulfilling business and technology roles, but they have security backgrounds. And so you take a company that is delivering a cybersecurity product to their customers, they have an incentive to define strategic objectives that have security baked into it, because it is related to the business that they're doing. They're not doing security just for the sake of security. And I think the way that they go about doing things and tying security into the business objectives, because they are technology companies or services companies, is a great model or framework that just your average commercial company can follow, because they tend to have fewer problems. Even if you take RSA and they had their problems in the past, their response was very fast. They were very clear in their communication about the problem. Their remediation happened very quickly. And it's because security was baked in to the culture of the organization, and because security was one of their strategic targets, it kind of helps you differentiate between, yes, a security company was breached, but they bounced back quickly, versus a regular commercial company that just has a few security people, if any, and then they have a problem. And now all of a sudden, we're throwing a lot of money at a problem that could have been solved in advance. You know, you take some of your cities, for example. I live in the city of Atlanta. The city was subject to a ransomware attack. I thank the city of Baltimore for falling victim to two, so that now Atlanta is not on everybody's map. Everybody's looking at Baltimore because they cleaned up and then got hit again. But it, I think long-term, it speaks to the culture. Now, obviously, there are some limitations with state and local government, where they don't all, you know, all of their resources come out of tax revenue, and they have to use that tax revenue to serve multiple purposes, not just spend all their money on security. But it still kind of identifies, if you're comparing and contrasting, a commercial security company that has baked security into 100% of their operations versus a municipality where it might be an afterthought or it's not the highest priority, because saving people's lives and providing public health and providing public services are a much higher priority than security controls. It just identifies that you really have to put some thought into what is the long-term objective and how are we going to do that. And it's the reason that Class LLC chooses to focus on strategy, because there are plenty of other players out there who will help people focus on actually putting the controls in place and doing the risk assessments and making sure that everything works properly.
You know, this is a very unique niche for what you're doing in the roles that you've had as a volunteer, as the president in board service at ISSA International, even in your local board, conferences, collaboration, all the stuff, all the contributions I know that you've made. Strategy is one of those areas where we need a champion, and I'm glad that you were able to share your thoughts and perspectives with us today. My name is Sean Murray. I'm the host of today's edition of the New Cyber Frontier. Today's edition, we welcomed Keon Williams, who's the president and CEO, founder of Class LLC. Appreciate you participating with us today. Keon, do you have any last thoughts for our audience?
My final thought would be that strategy is not an easy thing to understand. Every company is going to have their own approach to doing it, but I think every professional should learn the basics so that they can incorporate those basic fundamental principles into the work they're doing. There is a time and a place for being tactical, but anybody in a leadership position should develop the capability to think strategically. And I encourage, just because of my personal bias, that all organizations should start thinking strategically about cybersecurity.
Well, thank you again. I appreciate your contributions to the New Cyber Frontier. Again, thank you to Keon Williams, President, CEO of the Cyber Leadership and Strategy Solutions, Class LLC. Thank you very much, Keon. You have a great day.
My pleasure. Take care.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of New Cyber Frontier. Remember, please follow and participate as New Cyber Frontier is supporting a grassroots community effort to empower the individual in the digital age. Check it out at privacyforthepeople.org. Also, make sure to join our mailing list so we can keep you informed. If you have an idea, if you have a question you would like to hear answered, or if you just want to get involved in what we're doing, reach out to us at newcyberfrontier.com. We also encourage you to visit our sponsors' links, because they are the ones that really make this show possible. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode of New Cyber Frontier.